Content warning. This episode discusses issues related to sexual assault, abuse, and violence.
Hey everyone! Today we're continuing the second half of our conversation on periods behind bars, where we will be focusing on how the incarceration system uses menstruation as a method of social control. I'm Bhavna.
And I'm Vendela. And this is Women's Health Incarcerated.
So here's a quick recap from the last time that we talked about menstruation. Feminine hygiene products are not free in all jails and prisons across the country. The First Step Act is the only notable piece of federal legislation that we could find regarding this issue, and it states that the federal prisons are required to provide free menstrual products for incarcerated individuals. Which sounds great, but there are some issues with this policy, including ambiguity in terms of quality and quantity of products. Additionally, this legislation does not cover those being held in federal immigration detention centers or those who identify as transgender in federal men's facilities. And neither does it apply to state prisons or jails, where the majority of incarcerated women are being held. And when you look at state prisons and jails, some states have already passed legislation to provide free menstrual products to their state facilities, and a handful of other states have proposed this legislation. But for the majority of correctional facilities across America, menstrual products are still inaccessible.
Last time, we also talked about the physical health implications of menstruation in the incarceration system. So if you missed it, please go check that out, because this week, we'll be focusing more on the social and psychological impacts of having periods in these facilities.
All right, now that we've given a brief overview of the first menstruation episode, let's get started with today's.
First of all, what happens when you're not granted access to an unlimited amount of free, high-quality hygiene products? Well, essentially, your physical health is placed in the hands of others, and therefore, you are forced to suffer a lot of psychological consequences. Many institutions place limits on the number of menstrual products incarcerated individuals who menstruate receive. For example, in Delaware, individuals have to ask correctional officers for sanitary pads and are only given a maximum of 6 pads per cycle.
To put things into perspective, many tampon and pad companies state that it is recommended to change your pad every 6 to 8 hours, which is what the FDA actually requires. So if this is the case, then that means that you would be going through at least 3 to 4 pads per day, which means you'd need about 15 to 20 pads per cycle. And keep in mind that number is also subject to change depending on how heavy your flow is. So this suggests that many menstruating incarcerated individuals are very limited in how many pads they can use during their cycle. In fact, it's been reported that some incarcerated individuals have worn the same sanitary pad for several days. Going back to our discussion last week, we mentioned that some people would have pads slip out of their pants because they were worn for too long, and others would constantly experience staining of their clothes because their pads could no longer hold all of the blood, which can lead to a lot of humiliation and discomfort. Clearly, not having control over the number of products that individuals have access to can be very detrimental to someone's physical and psychological well-being.
So let's dive more deeply into this idea of access, or rather, a lack of access, being a form of social control, and the impacts of this control on someone's mental health and psyche. Well, first things first, what even is social control?
So the goal of social control is to maintain conformity in society through set norms, sanctions, and laws. It's basically when people in power, through laws and customs, try to influence the ways in which people in society act and think to follow a certain public order. In fact, the entire carceral state is a macro-level mechanism of social control. Laws and the criminal legal system define what is acceptable in society while punishing people who break these norms. The carceral state specifically targets Black, Brown, and Native people, as well as poor individuals. People of color and poor people are disproportionately under the surveillance and control of the state. So, for example, when we discussed the criminalization of poor people in episode 2, the ways in which people were being penalized for not being able to pay their fines is a form of social control. The norm or expectation is that people should be financially secure, and any financial instability is a judgment on their character, rather than the circumstances beyond their control. We then subject individuals to punishment for not meeting the social standard.
Yeah, and even our discussion of status offenses from episode 1 is an indication of this. These status offenses, which involve punishing young girls for things like skipping school, is a clear form of social control. The legal system is being used to separate quote-unquote deviant behavior from acceptable behavior, and this predominantly impacts Black and brown children more than white children. To put this in the context of current events, an ongoing and chilling case in Oakland County, Michigan, indicates how social control has been used to adultify and criminalize Black children for behaviors white children are more commonly able to do. Grace, whose middle name is being used for privacy purposes, is a 15-year-old Black girl who is currently being incarcerated at a juvenile detention center for violating her probation by not turning in a homework assignment. Even though Grace has ADHD and did not receive the promised support from her individualized education plan once she transitioned into remote learning, Grace's social worker filed this as a violation of her probation. The judge, Mary Ellen Brennan, then decided to incarcerate Grace for being a, quote, threat to the community. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and Grace's story is just one of the countless ones that goes to show how the distinction between deviant and acceptable behavior is often arbitrarily set, looks very different for white people and Black and brown people, and is enforced by those in charge simply to maintain a form of social and racial order.
So today, when we're discussing menstruation in the carceral system, we're talking about how it functions as a micro-level example of social control. In the case of incarcerated individuals who menstruate, specific rules, both spoken and unspoken, of correctional facilities shape the way that these individuals experience their period. More than that, it's how these rules and power dynamics, created by the ones with the power, manipulate these individuals into feeling as if their menstruation is not good or natural. This, in turn, is perpetuating a stigma that reinforces the power structures dictating acceptable behavior behind bars.
In one article we came across, we learned that revoking access to menstruation products can actually be used as a form of punishment. This article dove more deeply into this issue by describing a specific individual's experience. So this incarcerated woman was sent into solitary confinement, having to stay in her cell for 23 hours a day for almost 60 days straight. During that time, when her period came, she was only allowed a few sanitary pads each day, an inadequate amount for her heavy flow. And because of that, she had to use a sock and rolled up tissue. She reported how dehumanizing this experience was. She was literally being denied essential products as punishment. In another case, an individual in San Luis Obispo County Jail bled through all the pads she was provided and didn't have access to more menstrual products. As her mental health deteriorated, she was placed into solitary confinement without any products or clothes and had to sit in her own menstrual blood. These are also clearly examples of how experiences of incarceration are gendered. Solitary confinement is already recognized as an extremely psychologically damaging practice that can result in anxiety, depression, psychosis, and paranoia. And when experiencing menstruation is added onto this practice, harm could very well be increased.
Right. And I just want to reemphasize what's happening in these situations. These individuals who were already being punished by being incarcerated were being further punished by being placed in solitary confinement, and even more punished for the natural bodily processes they experience as women. This is very clearly a form of social control. It's not about the act of punishing itself, it's about how these individuals are stripped of their autonomy by being subjected to the power of others, simply because of who they are, not because of what they've done. That's literally what it means to be socially controlled.
Something that our society, and honestly the world in general, constantly faces is the stigma around menstruation. But menstruating is just as much a natural bodily process as being hungry or thirsty. Being denied access to menstrual products or getting disciplinary tickets for staining your pants is essentially telling individuals that this process of menstruation should be easy to maintain without external help. They are being told that these products are not a right, but a privilege, that menstruation is not a natural human process that needs to be accounted for in the same ways as having to eat to survive. They're being told that it's something that you can get punished for. But menstruation is a natural bodily process. It's not something that we control or even ask for. It's not a choice. And access to menstrual products should not be in question.
Since access to menstrual products is evidently not seen as a basic human right, incarcerated individuals are vulnerable to experiencing abuse and control while attempting to get access to these products. Already humiliating practices in the carceral system, like strip searches or body cavity searches, can be especially horrifying for people who menstruate. To give some context, during these searches, women are asked to spread their legs while officers look into their vagina, or in some cases, insert their fingers, like how it happened in a New York City jail. This practice is in fact prohibited in New York City jails, yet it still occurs, which goes to show that those in power can bend and break laws as they please. In one case in San Antonio, Texas in 2016, an individual was arrested for alleged drug possession and had to undergo a strip search. During this search, an officer pulled out her tampon in the direct view of several other officers. And unfortunately, this isn't an isolated incident.
Yeah, and depending on the facility that they're in, incarcerated people are also subject to strip searches before being able to visit someone, which can lead to even more feelings of shame when a woman is on her period. One woman reported blood running down her legs when she was searched before a visit with a family member. And some women have even avoided visits with their loved ones or their legal team to avoid the embarrassment of being strip searched while menstruating. These practices aren't just psychologically harmful due to the act itself. The added effects of these practices is literally further distancing individuals from their social support because they feel this fear and embarrassment that prevents them from seeing their loved ones. And in general, these visits may already be limited based on the facility policies regarding visits and their loved one's ability to make the visit depending on factors like time and distance.
On top of this, there have been other instances of abuse in which someone's menstrual experience was exploited. In 2014, a Department of Justice report was filed describing widespread sexual abuse and harassment in Julia Tutwiler Prison for Women in Alabama. The findings from this report are as follows. Quote, Tutwiler violated prisoners' constitutional rights by violating their right to bodily safety and privacy and continuing to expose them to actual harm and the serious risk of harm from sexual abuse and harassment by correctional staff and other prisoners, end quote. It was found that at least 36% of correctional officers at that prison had sexually abused those who were incarcerated.
36%?
Yeah, I know. And that's just what's been reported. And as part of this sexual abuse that was happening, incarcerated individuals were sometimes forced to perform sexual acts for correctional officers in order to get menstrual products.
Yeah, and this was a relatively recent investigation. It was being investigated in 2013, and the report was released in 2014, meaning it happened just 5 to 6 years ago. This also coincides with the growing popularity of the hashtag MeToo movement. While this movement was founded by Tarana Burke, a Black woman, in 2006, Burke and many others have criticized how the movement was co-opted by Hollywood and white women, resulting in the exclusion of the communities it was originally intended for. In 2018, Burke commented on how the hashtag MeToo movement has been separated from many other social justice efforts, including mass incarceration reform. And currently, the majority of experiences of sexual violence in jails and prisons are completely left out of the discussion.
Yeah, you are so right. And in regards to the Tutwiler case, I want to name that, yes, this example is an extreme one of incarcerated individuals who menstruate facing blatant lack of human rights and being forced to endure extremely traumatic experiences. But that doesn't mean that similar occurrences haven't or aren't currently happening. And these experiences very clearly demonstrate how often menstruation is weaponized in a manner that can be extremely harmful for those without power. These experiences are what we're talking about when we say that menstruation can be a form of social control, particularly in carceral systems.
Right, exactly. And just as a quick note, since this report was released, officials at Julia Tutwiler Prison have been taking some steps to prevent this kind of abuse from happening anymore. The officials placed 300 cameras around the grounds, installed doors in the shower and toilet area for privacy, and increased the ratio of female correctional officers to males. It has also allowed for the help of the Alabama Prison Birth Project, which provides doula support for pregnant individuals and has aided in creating a lactation room for mothers that need to pump breast milk. Although there is still a lot more work to be done, especially considering the trauma that individuals in this prison have already experienced or endured, the prison seems to be taking some genuine steps in the right direction with the help of ADOC and the Alabama Prison Birth Project. But that doesn't excuse the fact that harmful experiences such as these, although to varying degrees, have happened in the past and continue to persist today, in prison and elsewhere.
So in terms of social control, we also want to touch on how it can be demeaning for menstruating people who are incarcerated to have to ask somebody else for healthcare products that should be viewed and provided as a basic human right. Especially when that someone you are asking is a correctional officer who can abuse their power by choosing to say no. One formerly incarcerated individual reports that the experience can kind of go like this. You're having to ask a correctional officer, particularly a male officer, for a tampon, which already in itself can be a humiliating process. Then she states that the officer can choose to say no or even complain about how this request inconveniences them, that it's annoying that their tax dollars are going towards products that you need. But ultimately, you have to sit there in silence because at the end of the day, you need these products, and the only way to get these products is by remaining complacent in the hopes that these officers choose to say yes. This might be the reality for many incarcerated women.
And it's also not just about feeling humiliated. It goes even deeper than that. It's about the fact that you have to ask another person, and sometimes even beg someone else, for products that your body needs. It's this constant reminder that the prison controls your hygiene, your well-being, your dignity, and essentially your life. If our incarceration system claims to have goals of rehabilitating people, it is hard to imagine how these cruel conditions of confinement would bring about this change when they're barely allowed to change their pads when necessary. What these stories and realities demonstrate is that incarcerated individuals in particular are especially deprived of their agency by members of the carceral system and taken advantage of simply because they menstruate. Those that hold power within incarceration systems tend to wield it in a way where they exert control. We have to remember that the menstrual experience of incarcerated individuals is just a microcosm of this larger picture of social control that is prevalent throughout the entire incarceration system, and beyond that, throughout all of society.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. We hope that you've gained more insight into what the menstrual experience can be like for incarcerated women physically and emotionally. This issue is representative of the broader issues of misogyny and disregard for women's needs in our society. It can be hard to think about what the solution is or what we can do now, but I think when we see these policies, legislations, elections, etc., it's relevant to consider the impact of social control on an individual and on a systemic scale, and to critically consider what communities are getting called into the conversation and how they're being impacted. Join us next week as we speak with a formerly incarcerated individual regarding her mental health journey in prison and the various forms of social control she herself observed. Until then.
Women's Health Incarcerated works to raise awareness about the experiences of women within our current incarceration system, with a primary focus on health-related issues. The podcast can be found on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you want to learn more about our episodes, view the transcripts to see where we get our information, or find different ways that you could get involved, please visit www.winkthemovement.org. That's www.whincthemovement.org.